Crikey! Neymar's on fire. Mexico crash out. Spain put 10 past Tahiti. We've got the Confederations Cup lowdown. The Premier League fixtures have been released. Newcastle chaos. And what's more competitive, the World Cup or the Champions League? Recording live from the Londoner pub in Addison. Me, producer Gio, and our two guests, we're on the ball. Good morning, it's match four, the fourth On The Ball podcast. I'm joined today with two very special guests. Brad Namdar is back. How are you doing, Brad?
How are you? I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, not a problem, not a problem. West, Overstreet, back, second week running.
Yeah, ready to go.
Ready to go? Be checking out those Premier League fixtures.
Yeah, a little bit. Excited about week two.
Yeah, exactly. We're in the Londoner in Addison, recording live. I'm here with producer Gio. And first things first, we spoke last week, the beginning of the Confederations Cup. Hugely exciting, it's kicked off with a huge bang. I remember after the pod, me and Wes watched the Brazil-Japan game. And I mean, I have to eat a huge slice of humble pie. Because I said a few weeks ago that I thought Neymar was overrated, and he has proven me wrong. So I will eat my crow as Kevin Camacho says. What do we think of the tournament so far? Good tournament?
I like the way Brazil's playing. Their defense is surprising. It's surprising a little bit. More consistent than you would expect for them.
Considering we spoke last week about what they were missing,
yeah,
and then they've played brilliantly.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were talking about. They would be missing in that defense and that leadership at the back, and they're playing really, really strong back there right now.
Yeah, they are. I've been hugely impressed with them. Although Hulk is really awful.
He is awful. Here's the thing also to address the Neymar thing is that I think that, you know, as you know right now with the protests and the activism that's going on in Brazil right now, the country is full of emotion, energy, passion from the soccer fans to the people protesting against the government, you know, spending and allocating all that money for the World Cup, which of course you hope everyone's safe and, you know, this will be settled soon. But, you know, Brazil is a very passionate country, and soccer is a huge thing. And Neymar, you know, is in the center of this area, this bubble that is comfort energy zone, that he's in front of his home crowd. He's in front of the, you know, the Brazilian fans, and it's a comfortable environment to play at. So I would like to see Neymar perform like that in a stadium that is not supporting him, that's booing him, where it's not his host country. He's not going to bed there every night. And the roster he has, and if you look at it, the lineup and formations, it gives him a lot of space to be free. And if you put him, you know, I'm not saying he's a bad player, and I'm not saying he's the world's best player. I'm saying he's a phenomenal player for Brazil right now. But, yes, humble pie. He did better than I thought he would.
Is it premature to say he's world-class?
I think he's a world-class skilled player. I don't know yet if he's a world-class performance player in big matches.
Yeah, I mean, the two strikes that he's had so far...
World-class finishes. Yeah.
Both volleys off both feet were amazing.
And even the assist
versus Mexico when he split the defenders. Yeah, I mean...
Because I got a lot of abuse on my Facebook, people saying that he was world-class. And I said, well, we got to hold up for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, it is one thing to do it in the Brazilian League, and international football is different from the highest level for a club. But certainly he's proving that he's at least got a huge amount of potential.
Well, look at the guys that was defending him, Salcido. Couldn't keep up with him. I mean, you know, if I race my dad,
honestly,
I'm going to beat my dad.
He is awful. That's okay. But he's old, right?
He's an older guy. 38 or something. Something like that, maybe 55. I don't know, but you know.
Well, he looked 55.
Well, he's one of the issues when we talk about Mexico, like the changing of the guard with Mexico. They still have Salcido there.
I like the way Salcido crosses. You know, he's got this angry man look about him, but he's not who he used to be.
Right,
in all honesty.
And then they got people like Torrado, like the older guard that's still there, and they're trying to bring in these new people.
I think he's a granddad now.
Well, that's when we talk about. We said how impressive Brazil have been. I mean, Mexico, two games. Two losses. They played Japan. By the time this podcast comes out, they probably lost to Japan.
I love it.
I think they'll give a Japan a run. I think they might get a run.
What do you guys think of Giovanni Dos Santos?
He's a workhorse. I mean, that guy is nonstop.
But his final ball, I thought, was just so...
He tried to do too much.
He was at Spurs. Yeah. But he never ever played. But I've always normally been impressed with his work rate. And
his work rate is amazing.
He's very quick.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of surprised he never played. I think he was at Spurs for like 5 years and like... Five first team appearances.
Yeah,
it's the English Premier League, though. You know the style of play. There's only one real player that I can think of that plays with that skill style that was successful. That's Cristiano Ronaldo. And Ronaldo had Sir Alex Ferguson. When you have him backing you up as your coach, you know you're gonna do better. But Dos Santos,
you just paid Dos Santos the biggest compliment.
No. I'm saying same style. They're skill. They like open space. They like to have flair. They want to have the ball close to them. They want balls on the run. Very similar styles. I'll even say it. He reminds me of his body figure and structure and the way he plays with the ball close to the ground like Ronaldinho. Not saying he's Ronaldinho, but similar style. Mm-hmm. But he cannot expect to come into an international match and try to be Cristiano Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, every time he step out on the pitch. And I know the Mexican fans are extremely frustrated with them having one win in 2013. But that being said, I do think that it's because of a lot of players are trying to do too much and also relying on Chicharito too much. You know, he can't play with his back, you know, to goal.
Yeah.
He couldn't do anything against Brazil. You know, they were trying almost too hard to score against Brazil instead of just play. They had their moments of magic, but they broke down on their own at the end.
Yeah, I thought because the first, 15 minutes of the Brazil-Mexico game, Brazil looked like they were going to run rampant.
Yeah. They felt it. And it's like, you know, playing at Azteca Stadium, you know, when you have the whole Mexican fans going against you. This time they experienced it in Brazil, you know, with all the Brazilian fans going against them, and they look like, you know, a deer in the headlights.
Well, absolutely. With Mexico, are the expectations too high? I mean, it's a soccer mad country, much like England is. And the thing is that the expectations for the English national team are too high, and that's why the general public have to remember we're not very good. Do you think the Mexican fans need to do that as well?
I mean, I applaud the British, by the way.
Oh, why?
over the past, I would say, 5-6 years, I applaud them for bringing their expectations down.
We have brought them down. But should Mexico do the same?
I don't know. I mean, they got a lot. The economy and going into their national league is really, really booming right now, and it's really, really picking up. I think they're just in a transition period. I mean, after their performance in the Olympics, they're really, really coming around. And I think it's just that they're in a transition period. Like we talked about the older players they have. They're trying to integrate the players right now. And I think once they get their style, find a more comfortable style with the younger players, I think they'll be fine. I think they're really talented.
I want to address something right now, too, that you brought up the Olympics, because I've had this discussion with many people, and I want to say it now on the show, because I'm going to tell them to listen to the show, and they're going to say this. The Olympics. Soccer.
Screw you, Brett. I know where you're going.
You know where I'm going. Yes. Okay, yeah.
By the way, I was there when they beat Brazil.
The Olympics soccer is nothing. In FIFA's eyes.
It's not a FIFA competition.
It's not even... Exactly. FIFA doesn't recognize it. And when you have a roster of kids, they are kids, you know, majority of them are U23s, play there.
That's right.
Okay, great, you won the Olympics, but you're third place right now in qualifying for the real, you know, the big boy game, the World Cup. So the Olympics doesn't mean anything. And I think that expectation after winning the Olympics, they say, oh, we're going to go to the World Cup qualifying. That's like me saying, all right, guess what, this kid won, you know, a state title for six-man football, and now he's going to try to win a national title in D1. It's a very different game. It's a very different game, you know? You have the big boys now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that big of a gap. I mean, do you think they won't qualify for the World Cup?
I think that there's a huge difference between winning the Golden Olympics and qualifying for the World Cup. And I think that Mexico right now, they're putting more pressure on themselves to qualify for the World Cup. They're third place right now.
Well,
in the standings.
Will their coach be there? I mean, especially if they lose today to Japan.
Does he
go?
What do you think? You answer that first. If the coach will be.
I think the coach will be. I mean, it's too close. I mean, it's too big of a squad.
Not too big of a disaster, this tournament for them then.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't qualify for the Olympics, then obviously. I mean, for the World Cup, then obviously he's gone. But at this point, I don't think this tournament's going to have that much effect on his career. I mean, obviously he's going to be in the hot seat. Yeah. But I think they'll qualify for the World Cup. Relatively easily. I mean, I think they'll get better.
I mean, they should.
Yeah.
I mean, from that kind of group.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be sad if they didn't, though. I'll be honest. But you know, Chapa, here's the way it is: that the Mexican Football Federation, it's in a tough spot right now. You have the people that are hungry. That, like I said, they hold the Olympics as the holy grail right now for them. for winning the World Cup. You have a coach. Listen, he's putting out the players that need to be on the field. He is putting out the players that need to be on the field. They're just not scoring. And at the same time, you know, it's like you're looking for a scapegoat in the sense, and which a lot of time is, you know, the when you lose, yes, it falls on the shoulders of the coach. But Mexico has had many chances and many games to score, and the ball just didn't go in the back of the net. And a lot of that also has to do with, you know, I would say with inside the locker room, within the players, you know, there's a lot of things people don't realize in professional soccer and international teams. What is the environment like inside the locker room? What's the environment like at the camp? I mean, the coaches, you know, if you remove your coach a year before the World Cup in the middle of qualifying, you know, you're almost giving a way out because, oh, well, this new coach, you know, that just came in now, if we would have had him the whole time, we could have qualified or could have done better.
Well, it's part of the problem that they've changed coach so much. I mean, they had Tudor Sanchez, they had Sven-Göran Eriksson was their coach for a while.
Yeah. I think they've been having a hard time finding a coach that will bring the style of soccer they want because, you know, I love the Mexican culture. I love Mexican soccer. I love, you know, all that stuff, you know, behind it. But it's about the culture and way they play the game. They want to see fancy football. They want to see flair. They want to see dynamic give and goes. And they want to see people fake people out. Sven-Göran Eriksson isn't that type of coach. So well, I think it's they want that style of a coach.
Playing devil's advocate, if I was a Mexico fan, we have Chicharito up front. We should be scoring. No?
They're having a big problem getting him the ball. I mean, right, yeah. In most of their games right now, they can't come through the middle. Everything is having to come up the flanks.
Guardado and Dos Santos, I think they're the only one like on the wings that will get the ball.
But I mean, up the middle, I mean, they just have nothing. Like in the engine room, it's just like there's nothing there for him. And Chicharito can't stand. They can't throw the long ball into Chicharito and him hold up play. And I mean, it's hard for me. I think he had something like 35 touches, maybe last game, something like that. It was minimal. Like he was just.
He's got more responsibility though with the Mexican national team than he does at Manchester United. Look at this. He's a consistent starter for Mexico in international soccer. International soccer is the highest level there is in world football. I mean, I am very confident with that.
Not the best quality.
Not necessarily the best quality, but I would say the most competitive.
Oh, I disagree.
I think it's very competitive. That's a different. When you're playing for your country, you have the faith of the Mexican people on your back. You know, you have that on your shoulders. And Chicharito is not the forward. Not a forward who will take the ball 35, 40 yards out, dribble five people, or shoot, you know, or hold it up.
Well, he's a goal poacher.
Exactly. He's a goal poacher. But he's not, you can't have him to be your, you know, starter week in and week out. And no, he's going to put the ball in back of the net two times. He's going to be the guy to set up the other forwards. He's going to be the guy to do this against the teams like Brazil, like Italy, like England, like Germany, like France. Remember, he plays in the Premier League. And he's not a regular starter in the Premier League.
Well, I mean, playing behind RVP though, so I mean.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair though, he's almost fourth choice for Manchester United behind Rooney, Welbeck, and Van Persie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a great player, but.
A very good player.
But for supporters of Mexico, it's no big deal. I mean, this competition that they've failed, we think. It's a source of national pride, but at the same time, it's not life or death.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that big of a tournament in most people's eyes.
I think I gotta disagree with both of y'all. It is a very big tournament for them. It is a very big tournament because you know what? The way they look at this is how it's gonna happen if we go to the World Cup. They see that that's the team that's going. They see that this is how they're performing right now. I mean, this Confederations Cup, it is the dress rehearsal for the World Cup. And they go, well, you know what? In Confederation Cups, this is what happened, and this is how we played. And oh my God, what if we play Brazil? What if we play this team? What if we play that team? Something's gotta change. This is, and I know for the football federations as well. They are looking at this as a dress rehearsal. So their performances and how they do now, they will look at it very, very extensively.
Quick prediction and a good segue. Although people will listen to this and the game would already be over, we'll have a quick prediction. Who wins, Japan or Mexico today?
I love the way Japan played.
Yeah, they're so feisty. And, I mean, you saw how Kagawa played in the Italy game. Yeah. I mean, he was... brilliant.
Okay, so I would say
I'm gonna make my prediction last. Yeah. I got the USA over Germany. I wanted to put that one out last time. Yes. I got my prediction, but I will be last to say it.
I think Japan will win. Sorry, Mexico fans. I think Japan. Only because and we'll go on to after the predictions. I'll explain why I think Japan will win.
I'm gonna go with a 2-2 draw.
2-2 draw? Sitting on the fence?
Okay, either 2-1 Japan or 3-1 Japan.
Okay, so it's a Japanese victory.
And if Mexico scores, it's going to be off a cross or a penalty kick.
you don't trust them scoring an open play.
Salcido to Chicharito or a penalty kick.
Yeah, I think that, like, before the I think that Mexico had, like, 4 goals in open play this year, all by Chicharito, so, I mean, that's not
And if they lose right now, it's going to be just absolute anarchy.
Going on to Japan, I honestly think that Japan-Italy game last week was one of the best football games I've ever seen in my life. I thought it was a terrific game. What was it, 4-3?
Yeah, 4-3.
I mean, incredible game. Yeah. Japan were 2-0 up in 30 minutes against Italy. It's a so-called masters of defenders.
That's what's so beautiful about it.
Italy's known for being a great defensive side, and they got absolutely torn to shreds.
Yeah.
I mean, Kagawa played well. I thought Honda was terrific. He was really good. And he plays at, what, CSKA Moscow?
That's a good team.
That's a good team. They're Russian champions this year, but... Wow, if he came to the Premier League or maybe Serie A or La Liga.
This is a trial for a lot of them, too, to get looked at by the scouts.
Absolutely.
That's true, but I thought Japan were terrific. I mean, their goalkeeper not very good, and his jersey is just appalling. I don't think they've ever sold... the jersey's hot pink. I don't think they've sold one replica jersey. But they were terrific. We're always going to know Asian teams, they're really hard-working.
Yeah.
We saw that with even 11 years ago in
Japan. Yeah, and I mean, they were strong on the ball, too, as well. Really good at the foot. I mean, the goals that they scored, I mean, Buffon that was flat-footed.
Buffon's probably the second-best goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah, they were brilliant. I was shocked that they put that 3 goals on.
I was shocked how Paulo Pirlo played. I mean, considering he's...
Those guys are fast, though.
Yeah, I mean, but...
Ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding around him.
Pirlo's... I mean, for the... I think it was last World Cup, we were all saying how great he was, and he is getting old.
Yeah, the Euro Cup.
Euro, that's right. But he's been ineffective so far.
Well, the first game, I mean, with the
free kick goal, that was amazing.
Yeah.
How do you figure they'll do against Brazil?
It's a good game.
It should be. I think if Brazil starts quickly, they'll do
Brazil. Brazil 2-0 or 3-1.
That's your prediction?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think... It's so much one-on-one play. I think Italy's defense will be a little bit better comparatively, like stylistically, versus Brazil because they don't pass quite like Japan does. I think that one-on-one style will get broken down. The physicality of Italy, they can impose that a little bit more on Brazil.
We mentioned last week about Thiago Silva and David Luiz. Is Balotelli going to cause them a bit of grief today, you think?
His size might bother them a little bit. I know it definitely... bothered Mexico. Like, he was killing them on the backside. We'll see. I mean, Silva's really, really a strong guy. It's a good matchup. Might be a draw there.
I think that when we look at the analysis behind, you know, the first thing I want to say is that Japan, go back to Japan real quick. Great soccer, like you said. It was one of the best games I've ever seen. Now, this was a great also for players and for kids and for coaches out there that watch the game. The one thing that, you know, not only do I say when I coach and that, you know, you hear in locker rooms all the time, 2-0 is the worst score in soccer. And that was another example of it. 2-0 is the worst score to have in soccer. They came back to win it, all this stuff. They were unlucky, and Japan really went out there to play. They're a smaller side to that Italian side. Italy came out there with a load of confidence before the match. And it was, like you said, I really enjoyed watching the game. It was probably one of the best games I saw because it was pure nitty-gritty fight. Now, if you go to Brazil and Italy, you have most of the time, like I said, traditionally Italy's been known for their defense, but now they're having a little more flair. They're attacking as well. Balotelli is a great, great forward. He is a big, strong man up top. You never know what you're going to get out of him. But at the same time, Brazil also, like you said, David Luiz, you know, he busted his nose and he was playing in a game, and he's tough and nitty gritty.
He has to have surgery, I think.
Yeah, he's going to have surgery after
But David Luiz and the Brazil back line, they're big boys too. Yeah. They can handle him, and they're also very, very intelligent with it. You know, people don't realize in international soccer, there are so many dirty little nitty things that you do, and Balotelli has a short fuse. And if I was a coach of Brazil, I would say.
You'd wind him up.
Wind him up. Yeah. And you know what? The attack that Brazil has, 4-3-3 formation, okay? It's going to be it's one of the most annoying formations to go against. It's a 4-3-3 because you want to counter knowing that they have less numbers in the midfield. Pirlo is going to see that he's going to have +2 in the attacking third end in the midfield. So when he gets the ball, this guy can play wherever he wants. Ding, 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 ding. Let's piss off the forward, one of his main options, as much as we can. Take that number away and attack and attack and attack. I don't know if Italy can handle a 4-3-3 the entire match against them. They might break down. But that being said, with the, you know, the technical and tactical abilities Italy has had and they possessed, I think that it will be a good game. But I think Brazil, being at home, the way they're playing right now, is the best I've seen Brazil play within the past 3 to 4 years, to be honest with you. Yeah. And they attack, and their defense is doing a solid job. I think they'll be a good game. And you forget, you know, Julio Cesar was teammates with Mario Balotelli, you know, back in Inter Milan. These guys have had countless hours of, let's shoot the ball in the back of the net, let's do free kicks, let's do this and that. He's got a tendency to know also a little bit of Balotelli as well. Goalkeepers and forwards know each other very well. And Julio Cesar's older and more mature. So let's see how that happens. But I do think that Brazil has this one pretty much in the bag.
I mean, they should qualify. I mean, the tantalizing prospect of seeing Brazil-Spain in the final. I mean, we'll quickly talk about our favorite team, Tahiti.
Yeah.
I mean, getting there was all kind of crazy predictions. The bookmakers had 500-1 on Tahiti winning that game.
I was gonna put that down just for fun. You take those odds.
They all kind of crazy score lines predicted before the game that in up in the 20s.
Yeah. It's
just outrageous. 20 goals. Yeah. 10-0, 10-0. Hard to judge Spain on that one game, especially.
Absolutely.
But anything we notice about the Spanish team or that game in particular?
Yeah, you go.
I mean, it's hard to judge. I mean, we can talk more about Tahiti, and it's more representative of what Tahiti is than what Spain is, and watch that. Because, I mean, Spain's never pushed. I mean, they just kind of just knocked the ball around the park, put it in the back of the net. I mean, it just wasn't. But I just liked how the way that Tahiti played. They didn't park the bus. They just came out and played. They attacked. They went after him. They tried to score. And, I mean, that was awesome. It was a great sporting match in that sense. They opened up. They were open, obviously. Spain scored a lot. And that was going to happen whether they parked the bus or not. But for them to come out and try to go for goal, try to score, was awesome.
I
got to
give this big man a hug right now because I disagree so much with him that it's not even funny how parking the bus. It may have not looked like they were trying to park the bus, but they did. Did you see the kickoff?
The Tahiti player just smashed it straight upfield.
Why do you think he did that? That's all I know.
Because he wanted, I don't know, the players, teammates to get back, I suppose.
I don't think so. I think what they were trying to do was, first of all, they didn't want to keep the possession in the middle of the park against Spain off the kickoff for counter.
But they played well, no? You think Tahiti? I mean, considering they lost 10-0.
I loved Tahiti so far this tournament. I even said before the game, I was mad when Spain scored. I wanted Tahiti to win.
Yeah, I mean,
the
Brazilian crowd was 100% behind Tahiti.
Every time the Spanish players got the ball, they would cheer.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
But this is what happened. You know what? There's two things. I remember I was coaching at a soccer camp, and one of the coaches came up to me and said, "Did you hear what the coach of Tahiti said?" And I said, "What's that?" He goes,
"Oh, yeah.
He predicted they would lose by 15 to 20 goals." Well, I understand that we're being realistic here, but if I was a player, I'd be like, "Thanks, coach. Thank you for your support." But, you know, let's be real here. But Tahiti played a 5-4-1. Five defenders, four midfielders, one attacker. They were trying very hard to say, I'm going to say, yes, it was parking the bus. But they were saying that if you're going to beat us through with your three forwards, because, again, they have the winger and their two wingers and a forward, they have five defenders in the back, and the four midfielders and the one forward just run down and get the ball. They knew that if they were going to score, it was going to be on a long counterattack. But the first goal, and we were talking about this before the show, where Fernando Torres scored, goalkeeping for Tahiti has been the worst aspect of this Confederations Cup so far. It's let them down so many times. That goal that was shot near post was a basic, you know, you learn when you're 8 years old, come out at the angle, don't let them go near post. You have both of them covered.
I mean, is it unfair of us to criticize Tahiti? I mean, there's one professional player in their entire squad.
No. The goalie on that one, and there's other ones that drop balls, that's not unfair to criticize, because if you go and you're training with the national team and your federation's giving you 2 months of pay to just train and go to Colombia and do your training, you get beat like that. That's not acceptable.
I think it's a bit harsh. I mean, considering the competition, where you're playing, the size of the stadium.
There's only
9-year-old could have made that save.
There's only 180,000 people in country.
And I'm sure one of them could have made the near post save. It wasn't even a hard shot. Let's be real here.
It was just, I think we have to take into consideration who they're playing, where they're playing, the situation, the light.
I guarantee
this is probably that was probably the biggest match that they've ever played.
Oh, of course. You saw them giving necklaces to everybody on the bench. I mean,
and
the
that's
another
thing about
the
Indy when they that's called
one competitive goal in their history, and that was against Nigeria.
And even before the Nigeria game, they gave like trinkets and things.
Now I'm gonna be nice though. See, you guys are asking, so now I'm gonna be nice. But the goalie, I'll tell you this. I don't care. The goalie was bad. That was a very bad thing that you should know from pickup games from growing up. But anyways, as far as their play style, I love the passing and movement. They were pretty impressive, right? Some of these guys will get some trials and get some looks. I promise you that. And I thought it was cool some of the cousins and brothers were subbing in each out. You know, they would sub in for their brothers and their cousins. But they'll get trials, and I thought that they did a good job trying to go dynamic playing the ball. You know, in the second half, they came out in a 4-1-3-2. And that wasn't working, so then they went back to 4-5-1. And if you notice, what they were doing was they were compressing. They were giving Spain the flanks because they didn't want Spain to go through the middle, especially when Iniesta came in. They go, oh my God, let's give them the flanks. But, you know, I'm a fan of Tahiti now. I am. I'm a fan. I'm excited to see how they do in their youth, you know, their youth programs. I'm excited to see, you know, where they go from here. But I think at the same time, you know, they did way better than most people would have ever imagined. I mean, 10-0 against the second players of Spain. Okay, guess what? One of those players is worth more than their whole roster. So yeah.
I think
bad.
Spain's second string would probably win the Premier League.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a pretty impressive thing. Now, we said it's hard to judge Spain's performance, obviously, against Tahiti. Could we take anything away about Fernando Torres? I mean, that was one of the most bipolar games I've ever seen.
It
I mean,
he did
individual brilliance
players.
when he kind of chipped it over the Russian goalkeeper, and then he misses a penalty. 30 seconds later, scores. I mean, this is he really is an enigma, Fernando Torres. Surely.
See, Fernando Torres. Okay, here's an example for you. If you go play soccer, if we decide to go right after this podcast and go play some soccer outside in the parking lot against middle school kids, you'll have the confidence and the swagger to chip the ball over the little kid.
That's the
confidence and swagger.
That's what I mean. He had the confidence for a few times in the game, but at other times he showed completely lacking in confidence. I mean, that's what I thought was kind of bizarre about it.
When you know you're going to get 1,000 chances to score, you know, you're going to try to do certain things here and there. The missed penalty kick, for the life of me, I hate it when people shoot high on PKs, but whatever. You know, he hits the post and he goes and scores 40 yards later because, you know, he's a better athlete and he knows he's going to go score. He turns on the Jets. But what could they take away from it, Spain, that they can put some passes together, that they can go and score? But it really, they knew coming into the match that these subs, they knew as well that this wasn't about what they can show or what they perform. They knew they were playing a game they were scheduled to play because in practice they play against tougher players.
Yeah, I mean, the pressure on Torres and the national team, I don't think it's anywhere near the pressure that he's facing when he's playing for Chelsea. Yeah, that contract weighs on him, knowing that he will be on that bench real quick. You know what I mean? Yeah. At least with the Spain team, he knows he probably won't get just because of the way they play. He probably won't play as much, but at Chelsea, they know he has to be the man. He has to go out there and perform, and I think that pressure's breaking him at times at Chelsea.
Since he didn't start in the 2010 World Cup, I remember that. He was, you know, the man at Liverpool. He was this guy at Atletico Madrid. He was, you know, loved by everybody, you know, and then in the World Cup, he had a bad game or two. They benched him, and ever since then, it's messed with his confidence, and he hasn't been, you know, that guy that you know you used to see. But you know what? At the end of the day, he is Fernando Torres. I mean, this guy is an amazing player.
The second highest goal scorer in Spain's history.
Yeah. We gotta realize that, too. You know. But we'll see.
I mean, from Spain's performance, I don't think I've ever seen them misplace so many passes in the game. Now, fair enough, they're playing Tahiti.
It was lack of focus. I mean, they knew that it was in the bad. They knew that they had every advantage in the game.
But in Tahiti's defense, though, when you're a team like Spain, and this is one thing Tahiti did right that was very good, is like, you know, when they go 5-4-1, you have 9 players in the midfield and defensive third that you have to pick the passes to, you know. Casillas could have took a nap, but, you know, the truth of the matter is that you got 9 players in front of you and coming in inside the box and all that stuff. It's kind of hard to go ding, 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 ding. But after a while, they were able to get a few in. Boom, 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 boom. But, you know, they're not used to that. They're used to maybe 5 in the back, 6 in the back. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, they certainly help their goal difference.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when people were predicting the score lines, I thought, well, it's got to be more than 6. I mean, Nigeria put 6 past Tahiti.
Here's a question for you guys, then. if we had, let's say, a good international goalkeeper, Peter Cech, Tim Howard.
Wait, which country are we talking about?
Tahiti. If you had a guy like that, a real goalkeeper, with that squad, the amateur players, the one professional, if you had a goalkeeper like that in the box, do you think Spain would have won 10-0?
They'd have won probably 7-0.
Yeah.
I think 7. I think honestly, listen to me. Honestly, I would say 4 or 5. The goalie came out. Look at those two goals Torres scored when he came and poked it past the goalkeeper. He didn't sprawl out. These are basic things that goalies learn. Hold the ball, sprawl out, cover the near post, cover, you know. And that's the thing is I've worked a lot with goalies in my life, and I watched this game. I pulled my hair out. And here's another thing. Oh, my goodness. I was watching the game with some people, and I wanted to pull my hair. I actually threw a cup on the ground because I was gotten so mad. There were so many times where these forwards for Tahiti, the forward or an attacking midfielder, was making a perfect, beautiful run. He was in between
the gaps.
But
they didn't play the ball. But that was always because of the lack of quality that they have. I just think they could get that final vision.
They didn't play it. It was like right there, play the ball, through ball, over top, pull. I mean, they just didn't do it. They were scared.
The magnitude of the moment for them was great. But I mean, also, like, I think if you had that, going back to the hypothetical, if you have that world-class goalie there, I mean, the focus of Spain is going to be increased.
Been high, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they would have played different passes.
That's a good point. You're right. The focus probably would have been higher.
I guess this competition's definitely brought about some headlines. Hypothetical, Brazil Spain final. Who wins?
I'll go Spain.
You go Spain.
I think they'll be pretty comfortable right now against anybody in this tournament.
I think we had a big discussion about Brazil obviously last week. I think that's when we're gonna really judge. Yeah. I mean that's me trying to help myself when I trash Neymar.
Yeah.
But that's where we see whether Brazil and someone like Neymar if they're really that good.
When they have to face somebody that's of the same quality on the ball as they are, controls the ball probably better as a team than they do. I mean, there's a different type of pressure. And then we're going to see if that individuality starts to come out. And they break down.
And Spanish players.
Yeah, they break down against the team, yeah. I mean,
you know, let's see how he does against the La Liga players that, you know, are used to seeing guys with the touch on the ball, da-da-da-da-da-da, and we'll put a body on Neymar. You know, you're saying hypothetically them in the final. I'm going to ask you this. Hypothetically, is everybody healthy? Everyone's healthy?
For
both teams?
I think has there been many injuries? I can't think of many injuries that have happened to
him.
I think Spain will be healthy. I think that, you know, Neymar,
their players will be well rested.
They'll be well rested. I've seen Neymar fall down or from his hits and the tackles probably like, I don't know, 15 times, 20 times in the past few games. I think that you know, going against Italy with those big, aggressive sweeper defenders. I mean, I was a small player, and I'm still small. I'm 5'5 on a good day, you know. And I knew also when I was going against players that were much bigger than me, that were defenders and stuff like that, was the first thing they wanted to do was intimidate. They want to go and do that clearance right in front of you or hit you and stuff like that. You're going against now guys, you know, Italy is a very passionate, prideful team. I want to watch how Neymar keeps himself healthy in that game. I want to see then if he goes against Spain, how is he going to deal with Sergio Ramos, Pique, you know, the guys in the back, Albiol, all those guys. How can he handle himself there? That's a good test to see. It'd be a tough game to call right now who would win between the two. But I think if we have to go off the stats, you would say Spain. The smart money's on Spain. But then if you go playing in Brazil with the passion the way they're playing right now, then some money's on Brazil. So it would be a good game to watch.
No, we shouldn't talk about putting money on games. Cause
I think we should.
No, I put $50 on the Spurs to win, and that didn't happen.
that was a terrible bet.
That was a terrible bet. Don't gamble. From Confederations Cup, brief discussion on the Premier League. Fixtures are out. Are we excited for a brand new season?
Absolutely. Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Yeah, the special one back.
You fancy Chelsea's chances?
Yeah, we're going to be all right. We're going to be okay with Mourinho coming back.
Obviously, my team, Manchester United, first 5 games, they play Chelsea, Manchester City, Liverpool. Not that, you know, Manchester United could lose 3 of the first 5 games. I mean, that really put the cat amongst the pigeons.
The cat amongst the pigeons.
Is that a British expression?
I guess so. I understood it, but I got it.
I've never heard it.
Yeah, I haven't heard it.
The cat amongst the pigeons.
Cat amongst the pigeons, that's right. Or a duck on water. Have you heard that one?
I haven't heard that one.
Duck
on water?
No.
Duck on water.
Well, because the duck on water is very calm, but underneath its feet are paddling really quickly, so it's...
Oh, okay.
Okay. I think that might be like the Mighty Ducks.
I'll definitely borrow that one.
Yeah. I gotta write that down. Look at the pigeons.
There we go. Some transfers this week. We spoke, me and Wes quickly before the pod. Higuain, Arsenal finally spend money. It's a combined deal, wages as well as transfer fee of £50 million, $85 million. Good signing for Arsenal. Is that someone in it? I mean, he's world-class talent, a striker.
It's nice to see them spend money.
He's certainly an improvement on Jovinia. Yeah. Or Shamak, or Podolski, or Giroud.
I think we'll see. You know, you see a lot of Spanish players come in the Premier League, or usually, you know, it goes the other way around. It's just a different style of football at the end of the day, or soccer. You know, in Spain, you have more space. In Spain, you have more...
But he's proven quality at the highest level now. Yeah. More than 100 goals for Real Madrid.
Yeah, you know, and you have more space and more time. I think it'll come down to, you know, how he gets acclimated. Because here's the reality situation. Arsenal does not have the swagger, the fan base, the... just aura that Real Madrid does, you know. And Higuain coming in there, we'll see how he goes and how he fits in the lifestyle. Those are the most important things, I think, that are going to affect his play at Arsenal.
I mean, I think the style of play in the Premier League, he's got to get used to that physicality, being up top. I think it might be a really good fit, though. I mean, he's probably going to see a lot of balls his way. Yeah. He's probably going to have pretty good service just because of the way that Arsenal plays, and they have somebody that's a super aggressive striker like that.
Finally, a striker that can potentially score more than 20 goals a season.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been relying on Giroud, who's pretty average. Podolski, who's pretty average.
Yeah, but I mean, they did have RVP last year. And so, I don't know if he can't do more than what RVP was doing there, obviously. But, I mean, he'll have a definite...
Higuain signing certainly makes Arsenal that much more competitive.
Yes, but I think weekly you're going to see a tougher defense in the EPL than you do in the La Liga. Week in, week out. If we go through lifts every EPL team, and we look at the defense, the back four, it is a much tougher back four than week in, week out in La Liga.
Yeah.
Maybe midfield could be different reinforced, but week in, week out, I mean, if you're going against Getafe, and you're going against, you know, Real Sociedad, and then you're going against some of the other teams in the, you know, in La Liga, that's not the same as when you're going against Chelsea, Manchester United, Man City, Tottenham Hotspur. You go down
Everton.
There, Everton, those back four are back four. Those keepers are keepers, you know.
Yeah.
It's much tougher defense to play against in the EPL than La Liga, week in, week out.
Wait, what was the RVP transfer?
It was £23 million.
And they paid how much for you, boy?
It's a combined total of $50 million. So I think it's a $30 million transfer fee, and then
his wages over the
period of his contract.
I take VP over Higuain.
He's
got that left foot.
Yeah, like, that seems kind of odd.
That lefty.
Let him go to buy Higuain, but all right.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway.
Transfer fees often perplex us.
Yeah.
Whether they're overpriced or you compare two players and think.
And you don't have to pay it all at once.
We'll see. From Manchester City, we spoke about Spain earlier. Looks like they're going to sign Isco, which we mentioned that they were interested in.
Yeah, we missed that. We mentioned that last week.
Yeah. But he's a good player, good young player.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he sees Pellegrini as like a father figure. I mean, he came out and said that a couple of weeks ago.
Looks like he's choosing Man City over Real Madrid. Which, incredible, really.
Yeah, I think Pellegrini has a large part of that. He just has so much faith in him. I think a lot of his confidence as a player resides in him. So.
But they signed, Man City signed Isco, but they don't want to pay... I think it is like another $50 million for Cavani. The president of Napoli came out and said Man City were interested in Edinson Cavani, but they don't want to pay his buyout clause. So maybe the days of Manchester City spending ridiculous sums of money are finally over. I mean,
FIFA's
to be
trying
seen.
To make it that way, so.
With financial fair play, of course.
They have a pretty solid strike force.
They do.
Already there.
We spoke about Tevez, obviously, last week. Looks like he is on his way. Only that 1 year left on his contract.
He's just not a happy guy, man, wherever he goes.
Well, yeah, I mean, we did mention that last week about agents moving players on whenever they want.
Yeah.
And it looks like Tevez is certainly one of those. We'll take a quick 5-minute break. We'll be right back with you. We're on the ball. Welcome back to the On The Ball podcast. We're talking off-air about various topics. First of all, shout out to one of our loyal listeners, Austin Estrada, brother of mine. Hope you enjoy the show. We're also talking about Brazilian liquor.
Yeah, one of my good friends came up from Brazil this past week, and she brought me 2 bottles of cachaca, which is a popular drink in Brazil. So I've been sipping that
it's
and
good.
Watching games. Oh, it's good.
It's West recommended.
It's West recommended. LeBlanc is the brand of choice. Really smooth, great taste.
Okay, well, hopefully it brings Brazil luck as well. And then from listeners to alcohol to women's soccer. Brad, you wanted to mention? One of you guys
give
a message?
Oh, no, we got a shout-out over here for new record.
Shout out to Abby Wambach. Set the new international goal-scoring record for men and women, breaking Mia Hamm's record, which was 158. She came into this past game with 156 goals and scored 4, and now the new record's at 160.
Well, how many? So she's 160 goals.
160 goals.
How many appearances?
207 appearances.
Oh, wow.
That's really good. USA,
that
baby.
That is impressive. Yeah. But quick question on U.S. women's soccer. It used to be a big thing here. It's kind of gone down, though, in a way, or not really?
I mean, with the Women's Professional League...
They haven't won the World Cup, right, for quite a while, I don't think,
no,
the women's team.
They've won the World Cup.
Yeah, they've won the World Cup.
Okay. I need to follow women's soccer a lot closer.
Many times they've won the World Cup. But, you know, here's the thing. A lot of, you know, they have, you know, the Women's Professional League, and now they have an expansion that is like a professional development league, kind of like they have in the U.S. for men's, for women as well, which I think is great. And a lot of girls that play soccer, you know, all over the world, they look to come to the U.S. to go playing, you know, have a scholarship at universities and to be able to play in the Women's Professional League. I think that's, you know, it's great. I think out of anywhere in the world, women's soccer is the biggest in the U.S. We are the, you know, country for women's soccer. So it's good. It's good for the sport and good for, you know, girls all around the world.
Yeah, very, obviously women's soccer getting bigger, especially, there's the Women's Premier League now. I mean, Manchester United don't have a team, unfortunately. I guess they're not concentrating on that. But before we took the break, we were talking about the Premier League fixtures. Brief discussion on Newcastle. Chaos ensued, if people don't know. Their managing director resigned because they hired a new director of football who went on a popular radio show in England and mispronounced several players' names and mispronounced the managing director's name. West, make sense of it for me. I mean, what's going on?
I don't know. He just came in really, really hot. I mean, he was just fiery. I mean, he disrespected the fans, saying they were talking out of their backside.
I mean,
this is
the guy that's supposed to be in charge of negotiating player contracts and then recruiting players. And here he is in front of, well, on the air, in front of millions of people, mispronouncing the very players that he's supposed to speak to on a regular basis.
You know what? Here's another thing. You know, I think of it as sort of, that's maybe a little Mourinho-esque. Let's look at the psychology behind it. Where it's, you're not important enough for me to remember your name. Pick it up. Drop your, you know, your demanding salary, or I'll get someone else. What's his name again, Bob?
It's Joe Kinnear.
Joe Kinnear. I don't know his name, but I will. If you want another contract or a negotiation, make me know your name then.
But not only did he mispronounce people's names, he goes on air and says, "I've been in 3 cup finals and I've won them all," and he's won none. I mean, this guy made every mistake you could possibly.
He could have been talking about the video game, FIFA.
Oh, okay. No. Let's hope he was talking about that.
Yeah. Jeez,
but I mean, this, what a PR disaster. I mean,
maybe he wants to shake things up. Like, yeah, I mean,
on top of that, he came out and announced that he'd been signed.
Yeah,
the club didn't even announce it. He announced it beforehand.
I'm running out of excuses to defend him. Because he knew that the club would sign him. Because if he says I am signed, they will sign. So.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy is just ridiculous, I think. And he comes out and he says about his critics. You know, the last question in the interview was, is there any message you want to say to the Newcastle supporters who might not support your appointment as director of football? And he said,
fuck them.
He said the words to that effect. He said, well, clearly I'm more intelligent than all those people.
I mean, there was he might have a, he might be.
Oh, maybe. Well, joking here, it's just disaster. Now, of course, he's a former manager. Now, maybe Alan Pardew might go. I mean, last season they had a poor season, almost got relegated.
Two years ago,
they got, I think it was fifth, didn't they?
They got fifth in the league. Yeah.
Newcastle United needs a PR man.
Yumbias was like.
Yeah, Lombardi's, yeah, the yeah, he managing director.
He was really keeping Pardew there. I mean, that was the guy that was really talking to the manager. I mean, the owner, Alan, just keeping him there just because he had so much faith in him. And now that he's gone, I mean, Pardew's definitely on the hot seat, and he might not be around come next year.
I mean, it's very possible. People don't know. This is just a long list of violations that Newcastle have made. I think they were going to have... I guess it's like a very big thing in England, and there's too many of them. Like company, basically like a loan shark company, was going to sponsor Newcastle. I think this coming season, big controversy because A, that's a really big problem in England, loan sharks and loan companies, and the fans protested. I think even Cisse, who's probably their best player, certainly their best attacker, says that he won't wear the shirt if they have this loan company on their sponsorship. They've also in I think last year changed the name of the stadium because big in American sports, but in England the fans don't like to have a stadium named after a company, like a sponsorship, whether it's like the American Airlines Arena or something. I guess it's a very British thing to keep it like St. James's Park, which it is at Newcastle. This is another huge PR disaster by Newcastle, and they could be in trouble next year. I mean, almost got relegated. Premier League's going to be ultra competitive, so we have to monitor, I guess, the situation with them, and hopefully Joe Kinnear doesn't go on any more radio stations. Let's hope he doesn't. Any MLS news? You need to inform me as well as the listeners. There was the game of the week, wasn't there? I don't know what the score was. You might not know. New York, Philadelphia, wasn't it the other week?
That's right. Yeah, I wasn't able to watch it. I was busy watching the Confederations Cup and all that good stuff. But we still have the MLS going on right now.
But you're a big FC Dallas fan.
Yeah.
No. And they do, you know? No. You're no FC Dallas fan?
I'm a supporter of FC Dallas.
Okay.
I'm a supporter of them. Yes. Yes, I'm a supporter of Shelles Hyman, okay. And I'm a supporter of the players of FC Dallas.
But they're doing well, I think, this year.
Yeah,
they are doing well. They are doing well. I think that they are, if you've watched them play recently, they're playing more to a Shelles-esque style of play. They're attacking the ball. They're defending well. Players seem to be more motivated than they have in the past. I think a change in administration, getting rid of their CEO that they got rid of, last year, was also a very, very important step for the club to progress. So, I think that it's going to get back on track. So that's what I think of that.
I mean, we'll see. I have to be honest, I need to watch more MLS, especially when the league is growing.
Yes, right. I mean, right now, it's tough for a lot of fans, I know, with it being summertime and also with all these international games going on and trying to get more coverage. MLS needs to get more coverage on TV at the end of the day. They need to get more coverage, not just game of the week, just locally, to watch your local clubs play.
What do you think about having the MLS season going on when you have the CONCACAF Gold Cup, which starts next month? With the U.S. plays in,
the other countries suspend league play for the World Cup. League play is suspended all around the world. So I mean, I'm not sure. I think that our season schedule is bad as it is, the way that they do it. But I think you're creating more competition for fans and viewership at the end of the day. So
I mean, the Brazilian league's actually going on while this Confederations Cup is going on. So I mean, some leagues do a break when there's international games. I know in Europe, obviously, World Cup gets played in summer and all this stuff. Right. I think what you said earlier.
Yeah.
You really think it's a random discussion that international football is the highest?
Yes. Well, this is what I'll say about that.
Okay.
It's a different. You gotta understand. There's different levels. I mean, if I go say, am I going to put Nigeria, or if I'm going to go put El Salvador versus Real Madrid, No, it's not the highest level that there is. You can mix or intermingle clubs with international, but I will say this. I will say that if you look at the quality in the World Cup, and if you look at the quality, when you look at competitions, play in general, talent isn't what makes it the competition or the hardest part. I think that international football is harder in its own sense. Let's look at the World Cup, for example. It is one of the most passionate, most emotionally draining, most, you know, supported tournament in the world. There's nothing comes close to the World Cup. So if you're telling me that Real Madrid versus Barcelona is a tougher game than when you put Spain versus Argentina in the semifinals of the World Cup, no, that's not a tougher match to be played. All those players go out there, and you see that a lot of the best players in the world don't perform as well as they do in their domestic leagues and international football, because every nation brings their top players. So if we go to the upper echelon past 25 on the top international scale, I think it is a much more tougher and competitive environment than league play. Yeah.
West, what's more competitive, the World Cup or the Champions League?
I think I'd go Champions League. Simply because the amount of time the players spend with each other. I mean, the technicality of the squads is greater in the top of the leagues than it would be in international play, simply because the players don't play with each other often enough. And you see it, that's why players like Messi. In Barcelona, he's absolutely unstoppable. He struggles more with Argentina because there's not the continuity there. Well, there's not the style of play that's conducive.
You see
to
why
his
he asked this
set.
Question? He asked us for us to argue now.
Absolutely.
That's great debate. Because I would say, outside of Spain, mm-hmm. the national team, I think the best club side will always beat the best international side.
Never.
Absolutely.
Never.
Yeah. Okay, Barcelona would
here's
be.
Why. I'll
after,
tell you why.
After Spain, Barcelona would be any nation.
I'll tell
they'd
you
beat
why.
Brazil, they'd beat the Netherlands, they'd beat everybody.
Germany. I'll tell you why. It's Germany. Very hard to compare them.
Germany's good.
Germany's pretty good. That's a good point. Germany's pretty good. Germany. What about the Netherlands? You know?
I'm going to be controversial. I think the World Cup isn't actually very competitive.
Okay, now here's what I got to get on this part. Okay, here we go.
It's certainly not more competitive. And
do you get paid to play in the World Cup?
Every player gets paid.
Do you get paid in the no? Do you get paid to play in the World Cup? No.
Yeah.
Your federation gets money every time you
but
go.
But they pay the players.
No, not what you think. Not as much as you think. These guys
not
make
much,
pennies.
But they get paid.
Pennies compared to most of their pro contracts.
Okay,
it's the truth. It's pennies compared to their pro contracts. Unless you're like from Ghana, or U.S. or whatever.
They get paid $10,000 instead of $100,000.
Okay, when you're talking about players like Ronaldo or Messi or those guys, do you think that their motivation is for the money? No. Every kid grows up dreaming to play in the World Cup and to score and go in the final. I mean, you think about when you talk to people about soccer, it's the World Cup.
Okay, so, and this isn't me arguing against you. So the World Cup, performing for your country is still. It's still important. You
it
think
is
a player
important.
Would rather win the World Cup, for example, with their nation than with the Champions
when
League?
When we're talking about majority
yeah.
of players, yes.
Yeah.
And also, here's the thing about Champions League we brought up. Okay, yeah. This is, again, why it's harder to in international soccer than it is in club soccer. Because in club soccer, you're with your teammates every day. International, you're not with your teammates every day. Therefore, the competition to be able to play it makes it harder and more difficult. And also, here's another thing people have to realize. When you're talking about Argentina, when you're talking about Spain and England, these guys are all professional players that have been playing at a very top level. And when they come to camp, these guys come in all year long at random part times of the year to come and train for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe even a month before these tournaments, even longer than that. They do get a relationship with them. A lot of them have played with each other from the youth rankings all the way up. You do have a dynamic and a system that you play. When you get a professional player that are in these high international teams and you get them in training camps together, they gel much more quickly than you think. Their style does gel much more quickly than you think. But when you're talking about a club guys who are in there every single day, yeah, of course, the team chemistry is there. But at the same time, the counter argument behind that is because they aren't with them the entire time, that makes it that much harder than if it was a Champions League. Champions League, you have more break between games. Champions League, you have domestic league games. Champions League, you have two rounds versus a team. In the World Cup, no, you don't. You got to win your group, and then it's a single elimination loss. So competitively, it's harder. And also emotionally, it's harder. I think there's more, when you have the hope and fates of your nation on your back than your Inter Milan club fans, it's much more devastating crying. Look how many tears are cried in the World Cup. Nowhere near as Champions League. Let's be honest.
I think fans get more into the World Cup. Well, actually, I don't know whether I'd agree with
oh,
that.
Oh, come on.
They do. There's more emotion involved in the World Cup.
And that's what makes it harder, man.
What's harder to win?
World Cup.
The World Cup or the Champions League?
World Cup.
No, I disagree.
Well, they can't compare the two. One is longer than the other. You give them 30... Okay, World Cup is 30, on. What? 32? 30-something days? How many days?
Oh, the World Cup?
It's a month. It's a month long, yeah. It's 1 month. Mm. You have to get out of your group stage. You have to go into the, you know, the final eight, final... Or 16, 8, 4, final match. Win that. You have such a small, a short period of time to tactically get ready, to keep your players healthy, to travel to the country, to the different stadiums, to study your opponent, to analyze your opponents, to change your game plans, to get in your subs. There is such a short period of time to win the trophy against the best 32 teams on planet Earth, as opposed to Champions League, where you have a lot longer time to rest, to get breaks, to have two rounds against them.
But yet they have, it's the best club side.
The play in Champions League is better.
The play in Champions League, you could say...
Better. Look, close.
We're having a different... You guys have to say... You could say the quality is better. Yes, the quality of players is better. The quality of, I would say, the clubs is better.
Yeah.
But the competition of the World Cup is harder. Not just based on the quality of players, but because of the way it determines fashion, because of the support, because of the amount of time you have, because of the quality of players that are in those final rounds. It's a harder competition based on the competition of the country and the time of... the time you have to win it, not based on the quality of players.
I mean, I see where you're coming from.
Yeah. If you get LeBron James in the NBA Finals, seven games back-to-back, you know, they're drained at the NBA Finals.
It's real close. I just think that Champions League is probably just a little bit harder. But, I mean, then you can only win the World Cup every 4 years.
Okay, what if we did the top 32 teams in Europe, the Champions League?
Top teams, yeah.
In 1 month, go play in that form or fashion. Then you can tell me that is much harder to deal with than to play at your home and then come play at my home, and then we have domestic league, and then we can rest our injuries. If we got the top 32 teams in Europe and put them in a format like the World Cup, oh my God, you would have it would be another level of.
But we never see surprises in the World Cup.
See surprises all the time.
No, but whoever wins is normally would be with it. Whereas Champions League, you got Porto and Monaco playing the final in 2004. No one would have predicted that.
But that's also another thing that makes it a little more difficult. I mean, well, here's the thing. World Cup, yes, you do see surprises, especially, you know, now with the youth rankings coming up as well. But in the Champions League, you guys have to understand. And look, Jose Mourinho, I love him to death, and I think he's an awesome guy.
Well, West will not argue with you.
You know, Mourinho, and
shower.
The,
let the, look,
the heaven shower
praise come down
champagne
on us.
Showering.
He said the Champions League is the toughest competition in the world. And I agree with everything Mourinho says.
I mean,
except
the defending
that.
Champions didn't even make it.
You know, but here's the thing. Let's put it this way. Also, a lot of people don't realize this that goes behind the World Cup and behind the Champions League is that you can rotate your roster in the Champions League. You can call up certain players in the Champions League. If you already have your aggregate up or minus, I'll bring in the academy player, let my top goal scorer rest because we have a domestic league game. And Mourinho, when he won with Porto and Inter, was brilliant at this, knowing how to do that. In the World Cup, your roster is set. When you have that roster, it doesn't change. And for that month, you have to be able to...
32
players. Oh, they have so many players. Clubs, you have your first team.
But if someone's the 33rd choice, like, they're not going to play.
First team. No. But here's the thing. You have your first team, you have your reserves, and this is the truth behind it. The reality is that the European soccer, especially in England, you know this, is that their academies, their U19s, their U18s, their forwards, you know, Man United, when they came here and trained, I mean, I was watching them. I forget this one kid's name.
Dallas Youth Cup, right?
Yeah, the Dallas Youth Cup. Their U19 and their U18 forwards are better than some of the majority of the forwards on the reserves because they're younger, they got that flair. So you'll bring that kid up for a Champions League match, give him a debut and things like that, let your forward rest when you're up 3 goals on the aggregate. In the World Cup, no, sorry, you are stuck with the roster you have. If all your forwards break their legs, guess what? You got to figure out a way to get out of it. You don't have the time to rest. You don't have the luxury of rotating players.
I mean, I think that's a possibility, but I don't think it's used that often.
It's used.
I mean,
that the teams that win rotate their
players.
You
see what I did, Gio? I started an argument here.
Again.
We're trying to be friends here,
and you're starting to argue.
Well, no, here's my question to you. Yeah. Ask any player in the World Cup. Ask any pro player. Would you rather win the Champions League or the World Cup?
Well, it's the World Cup, because the emotional tie there.
Yeah.
So they'll play harder in the World Cup.
And because it's every 4 years. So a player realistically can only play about 3 World Cups in their life.
Yeah, I mean, you can play... as a professional, if you're a great professional, you can play for a lot of big clubs. But there's only one national team, and there's only so much room.
One national
team. You can't go to another team and play and start. So that emotional tie to your like, country and representing your family.
So if you like have, so you're right, emotional tie. All right, emotional tie.
How long is a professional career? 10
depends
years?
Who you, oh, okay, no, not even. It depends, like, what you play. But, I mean...
From 20 to 30, well...
I mean, it depends what leagues and if you're healthy or not. I would say, okay, a good... You're right. You can maybe play 2 World Cups if you're a top international player. 3. Exactly.
But, yeah, you can play how many champions?
Exactly. And if you go and let me tell you something. You just answer my question. If every player tells you, I want to win the World Cup, which one do you think they're going to play harder in then? The World Cup. There you go.
I don't know
you
if that one chance. Harder, though.
You're going to play hard. You're going to kill yourself. You're going to want to win that match. You're going to win the World Cup. You're going to want to win the World Cup. It's the World Cup, guys. I can't believe we're arguing about this. It's the World Cup.
I think its name goes the reputation of it rather than the actual quality of the tournament.
The quality, I mean, yeah. You're going to have teams there that, like you said, they're not that good. They're going to have some teams there that, you know, qualified in the weaker regions that the big teams will, you know, roll over them. But yes.
Has club football taken over international football?
Oh gosh!
Do you think, for example, for us club soccer fans, we'd rather our club do well than our nation do well?
Oh man! Well, it depends really? If you're in that country. Like, look at this.
Wes, would you rather the U.S. win the World Cup or rather Chelsea win the treble?
Well, they have Mourinho, so
don't
it's gonna happen. That's a given.
I'm proud to be an American. No, don't ask that.
Wait a minute. What? So hold on.
Okay,
the USA wins the World Cup.
I would be.
Come on. No.
I would probably. I'd be more excited for the U.S.
Thank you, but why did it take you that long?
Because I mean.
Took you a long time not to.
Yeah, because it's not even. It's in my mind. It's not even feasible. Yeah, it's like. That's
feasible.
Like a dream.
Okay, no,
that's
it's
like
not
a dream.
It's a goal.
Like,
let me
Chelsea can win the treble, okay. And that excites me. Okay. Like I know we can get
okay.
That.
Let me just tell you this right
the
now.
U.S. winning the World Cup, I'm like that's not gonna happen.
No. Here
Chelsea
go, here
winning
go.
The treble is not gonna happen.
They have Mourinho. Okay, they're gonna win it. Here's
I'm
the thing.
This,
okay,
this
yesterday,
is not a podcast,
yesterday, no. Yesterday at my soccer camp, I was doing it over there at SMU, my 7-year-old age group, we were Team USA. We won the World Cup, and let me tell you this right now. We did a little World Cup against the other countries. And it was a beautiful moment. You know, we went and tackled and sprayed the water and everything, and USA wins the World Cup in soccer camps. And if we can do that in soccer camp, we can do that in the real thing. You just got to believe in yourself. And we beat Germany. Don't say the back words. It just doesn't matter. Like I said, 2 of those players are worth more than a whole roster, so you got to give us credit.
Well, this debate will rumble on and on. So I ask you, listeners, would you rather...
We'll win it before England does.
The U.S.?
Yes.
Come on, bro. I don't think either of us are going to win the World Cup.
Yeah, that's
it. But okay, if we have to put our bets on one of them.
England, for sure.
No, I'd go USA because I think we got that nitty-gritty way of just winning these BS games at the last minute and everything like that. So I don't know.
I know the one thing about the U.S. team, they're always in great shape.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they
we got athletes,
motors,
man.
Yeah, they got
motors
athletes. Like no other team in the world. Like, we don't get tired.
And we got athletes. We are world. U.S. is known for developing athletes.
Yeah.
And goalkeepers. You know, we use our hands for every sport. But we're worldwide known in football for developing very good athletes. People send their, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson, Manchester United, when he was there, sent 7 or 8 of the players from the academy and also the first team to Frisco, Texas, to train at the Michael Johnson Performance Center. To go train there and go all do that other stuff. U.S. is known for developing athletes. So I think, you know, as the youth rankings is going up, as, you know, we're doing better and better and better, we're going to be much more competitive. If you look at the progression of soccer, U.S. has progressed so much more than any other country in the past 5-6 years.
Well, we had a long way to go, too.
Yeah, we have a
but,
long way to go.
Yeah, that's the one thing that's going to be hugely beneficial to the United States soccer team is the ability to train athletes.
And the funds we have.
Yeah, and
African
the funds.
Nations,
I mean,
don't have the funds. They have very good athletes.
You can see, I mean, like in the Olympics. We dominated the Olympics. We can train athletes better than anybody else in the world.
Yeah, even though we
so
didn't qualify.
Do you think once soccer gets
soccer.
Big, then...
Yeah, it's...
It's getting bigger. I'm telling... See, here's the thing. People say it all the time, though. Once soccer gets big, it's getting bigger.
Yeah.
It's getting bigger. It doesn't mean it's big.
I think U.S. can compete with any team in the world. Yeah, I'm saying the same. No, not basketball. In soccer.
In the sport they only play? Yes. They can compete.
We will be able to compete with any team in soccer. I think so.
Win.
You won't get hammered.
Like right now?
You won't get hammered, but you'll lose.
We won't get hammered.
Well, no.
I think we beat Spain 2 years ago.
You're no Tahiti, but...
We're no Tahiti,
what
but...
What do you mean, like, hammered?
Gets,
like,
okay, here's what I'm saying.
Like,
if we took...
Just confused.
Okay, let's play Spain right now, USA, against Spain starting
Spain will 11. Win 3-0.
I think that Spain would win.
Don't tell me the USA.
We would get a goal.
Okay, I think USA would win. Be
but you know what?
Half-time
I like the whole underdog aspect of it, and I like. Let me tell you something. You know what? I'm going to point this out, sir.
Okay, go.
The last podcast we were here,
yes.
Everyone told me that Germany, the quality they're bringing here, is going to destroy the U.S.
Okay.
Okay, but hold on. No, you said it's going to destroy the U.S. And I told you guys this, and I told a bunch of people this. I said, you know what? But let me tell you something. Kinsman's going to tell his boys in the locker room that guess what? This is our chance to prove something. We're going against. They call them the second squad. All this other stuff. Two of their players are worth more than all of ours. Let's go out there and play. And US came out there and said, I don't give a shit. And they played the game and they won.
You know what Klinsmann said in the dressing room? He said, we're playing the third string German team. We better
win
this
which
game.
They all are like,
what?
Hey, what?
They're
really like five-star
said.
Players on FIFA.
Let
me just
team.
Throw something in there, hypothetical. What if Manuel Neuer is in goal in that game? Same players. But
okay,
because
the
goal.
Guy made the one back pass
well,
and by
just,
accident.
Well,
the
saying, if
you made the goalkeeping thing earlier.
You made the goalkeeping thing.
I'm just
saying,
what is the score of that game if you just put Manuel
Neuer
in it?
If you put Neuer, the FIFA version of him in it from the video game, we wouldn't have scored that much. But within the real life, I think we would have gotten realistically three. Three. I mean, U.S. picked apart them. Look at Altidore's goal. Look at the way they played. U.S. picked apart that defense as well. They were going out there to play. U.S. can surprise people when they want to play.
Quick side note, you mentioned Jerzy Altidore.
Mm-hmm.
Signing with Sunderland. That's the rumor. Is he going to make it in
bad
the Premier
idea.
League?
No, bad idea.
He didn't make it with Hull, but you don't think he'll do well?
Bad idea to do it right now. He's
I mean,
scoring
you guys,
goals.
You've seen more of him, I think, both of you.
He's scoring goals, man, right now. He needs to keep doing that. He needs to keep doing that over there. He's
it's
playing
just,
Dutch League.
It's just hard
Dutch
to
League.
Say
Dutch League,
Dutch League,
coming
yeah.
in on that squad. I mean, he's maturing, and he's getting so much more confident up top over the ball. Touches, first touch is getting near perfect. I mean, he's just really, really getting better at such a phenomenal
he's,
rate.
He seems more comfortable.
And yeah, it's just like, I just don't know if going to that particular team is going to be great for him.
It
might knock that confidence that he's just now getting.
Because he's scoring.
Yeah.
He needs
one more year and then come to Premier League.
And you think it'd be better placed somewhere like Everton, where at least it's a
I don't think he should go to the Premier League
team.
At all.
Yeah, I don't know if he should come to the Premier League.
But he didn't do well in La Liga. He was at Villarreal.
He was 18,
he
you know? Come
yeah.
on. And he was in the U.S.
I think he just needs to stay one more year and then come over.
I think, yeah, and the most important thing for him is, and I hope Klinsmann talks to him about it, is that he needs to be scoring goals. What he's been doing in the Dutch League, and sure, a lot of the scores of those games are like 5-2, 6-1, you know, they're high-scoring games, but he needs to keep doing that. That's what's giving him his confidence in international matches. You go put him in the Prem against the best defenses in the world, you're not gonna increase your game going against them. People are going to say, oh, well, yeah, he's playing against much tougher defenses week in and week out, and that's going to make him better. No. Sometimes it's better to just have that confidence and swagger, scoring, being a little ignorant to some extent, and just playing, man, with that confidence.
Yeah, because especially, like, I think American athletes have that concept of you have to be dominant all the time, and if you're not dominant all the time,
kind of like Mexico.
Your confidence is gone. And so I think he needs to get that consistency of just being dominant. So when he comes to the Premier League, he has that backup of confidence. Not the first 10 games he doesn't score a goal. He's like,
I think it's dumb to switch
on?
Clubs before World Cup like that. I think, you know, and then Neymar going to Barca, we talked about it. That's dumb.
Yeah, it was still close. He should have either waited or left a year ago. But we'll see. I think he's going to be successful at Barcelona. I think he's going to be wildly successful there. I think the way that team is set up and for him to get in there and learn.
Oh, he doesn't want to learn.
With so many veterans, I think he will. On
he
that
doesn't
squad.
Want to
I don't think
play.
You have a choice on that squad.
You
I mean,
watch Neymar,
he's gonna
he
play
yells
for sure.
At, listen
but
to
Jesus,
me.
Jesus, I'm staying out of this Neymar
he's
debate
gonna,
because
he's gonna
I'm
play
always
for
wrong
sure.
with Neymar.
You think he's going to play for sure? I think he's going to get off a little bit. Listen,
I don't think
did you see him yelling at some of the Brazilian players in the match?
That's not Xavi.
It's chaos in the pod.
That's not Xavi. That's not Iniesta.
Chaos in the pod.
Like, he won't be talking to me. He won't be yelling at
Xavi
and Iniesta and Messi like that.
This kid knows he
just got
sold.
Should I put the microphone
down,
Gio?
Neymar
should
knows
I let them argue?
Neymar knows he just got sold for, you know, the price of, like, I don't know. What was it? 80-something? 60, 50? Someone tell me a number. We got so many numbers written down. Anyways, he got sold for a lot of money. All right, this kid's got this confidence coming off the Federations Cup, Brazil number 10. I'm coming here. And I watched him in the game. I look at it more from a coaching standpoint and, like, if I was in a club and I watched Neymar turn around and yell at the Hulk, yell at Dani Alves, yell at his players for not giving the balls.
I think anyone would yell at Hulk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But the point is that, like, you know what? And yeah, he's phenomenal.
He's not that
but coming in that Barca, you know, at that price tag with his flair and his confidence, sometimes confidence can be the worst thing to have. Overconfidence. and I could see him. I can see him going into Barcelona. Something doesn't go right. He might not start a game or two. They put him in late into the 76th minute, and boom, he yells. You know, I could see something like that happen, but we'll see. Maybe he'll mature before he goes there.
I don't know. From what I've seen and read, it seems like he has a good attitude about what's going to happen coming to Barca. He's already said, I'm playing second.
I like the kid.
He comes in saying, I know I'm playing second fiddle. I'm here to support Messi, to help him continue to be the best player in the world.
As I wipe the crumbs of the humble pie I ate earlier off my face.
I want him to do well.
No, I think Neymar has proven me wrong. He looks very sharp, very huge potential. But he's not world class. I mean, anyone that says Neymar is world class right now.
Technically, he is.
I think that's idiotic thing to say.
Technically, he's world class. Tactically, he's not. No, technically, he is world class. Tactically, he's not world class.
That's a throwaway comment, surely. I think that's diminishing the term world class.
Do you think they would pay that amount for somebody that wasn't world class?
What makes you think so? What's world class? What is world class in your book?
World class is a player that could get in any team, or they're in the top. World class is the position, left back, striker, whatever it is, and you're in the top five in the world. In your position.
Then I'm going to go and get top my win on it. You got it.
That's world class.
He's not top five yet. But
potentially.
Yeah, he has top five potential.
It's scoring in the Brazilian league. No, he has a lot of international goals.
You can't really judge him on that because he hasn't played outside.
Well, exactly. So you can't say that he's bad, but you can't say he's world class.
Isn't
that bad?
Yeah, I think you can say he's world class. Shows the talent. I mean, you've already performed in the Confederations Cup.
Rubinho had some great games.
You let me know when you want me to sick him. I think he's world class.
Yeah, I mean, he is. Go ahead and sick him.
Go ahead and sick him. Okay.
You don't think he could be another Rubinho?
You ready?
He can do that.
Are you ready?
Right? Or Pato?
Okay, are you ready? Let me tell you why he's world class.
Okay.
When you use the word world class, and again, I will talk like Jose Mourinho because this is probably what he thinks. I think that technically, with his ball skills and handling, he is world class. His touch is world class. His ability to dribble is world class. His tactical ability on being where he is on the field and knowing the space and going under system is not world class. If he's on a team where he is not a free-roaming player, he won't be world class. If he's on a team that allows him to roam and allows him to have space, he'll be world class. He's a world class player technically, but not tactically yet. We don't know that because we haven't seen him.
Well, there's plenty of players that technically have a great first touch and they're quick feet and stuff like that.
But are they number 10 for Brazil? You know what I mean?
I don't think in particular. I mean, like I say, there's people like Alexandre Pato and
Pato's another thing.
That people built up at the time.
At the time, they were world class, though, players. So the touches and stuff like that.
If someone's world class, it doesn't disappear in a year.
Yeah, no, it can disappear.
Unless they get injured or something.
What about Ronaldinho?
Ronaldinho.
Oh, don't bring me up with Ronaldinho. I'm too controversial with my views on Ronaldinho.
What do you think if you put Wayne Rooney? What if we put Wayne Rooney in the Brazil League? How do you think he would do?
Oh, he'd score a ton of goals.
You think so?
Absolutely.
I think it's a different style of play. I think it's very difficult.
Shevchenko wasn't world class. He was great with Milan in the first stint there, but he didn't prove it in the Premier League.
Yeah. If you put Neymar in the Premier League, that would be terrible.
Can somebody go from world class to not world class in a year?
No. I would never say he was world class. He was great in Serie A, but he was unproven.
But here's the problem.
I think if someone proves themselves in the Premier League, then they can succeed in any league.
No.
Whereas I think there's players that can play in La Liga, various players that be amazing in La Liga, come to the Premier League, do nothing.
I agree with that.
Fernando Morientes, one of the greatest Spanish players and Real Madrid players ever, was horrible for Liverpool. He sucked. But then every player, even Michael Owen, who I'm no great fan of, goes from Liverpool to Real Madrid. Okay, he didn't start every game. He was only there a season.
He wasn't that good.
His goal scoring record's phenomenal. It's like 23 games.
For Real Madrid?
Yeah, look at his goal scoring.
I gotta Google it. I mean, I don't want to take my iPhone out.
But honestly, his goal scoring record really... Now, he started like 5 games in the whole season. But his goal scoring record was like 1 every 2. David Beckham was phenomenal. I think not just British players, every player that does it in the Premier League succeeds in La Liga. But not the other way around.
Because Premier League focuses on, you know... It's very disciplined football. Well, it's very disciplined.
It's a much harder league.
It's very disciplined defense. It's very physical. Like I said, Neymar going to the Premier League would be the worst thing in the world. He would be terrible in it.
Well, A, the fans would boo the hell out of him. Yeah. I mean, all his flopping around and diving, I mean, it wouldn't really stand for in the Premier League, surely.
Not at all.
But I think that, you know, it is, you know, you're right to a certain extent. But I think that, you know, one thing that I know, listeners... We'll realize, and that we have to realize, is that there are much different style of plays based off leagues. You know, if you go look at the EPL versus La Liga versus Brazil versus, you know, the MLS versus the whatever, the Mexican leagues, all that stuff, Portugal, there are different styles of play. Some players can be successful there, and some players can't be successful there just off the way they play. But the good thing about the EPL, that it's a very it's a tactical league where you learn to play within a certain system and style. That is what your role is, and it's a very physical league. So when you do go to Spain, when you do go to leagues that allow you to be more free, you still have that basic tactical discipline to understand how to play the game. So I do agree with you to that.
Would Neymar score 20 goals in the Premier League? Yes.
Hell no. Oh God. 20?
If it's no, he's not world class.
Wait. 20 goals in a whole season, and he's healthy the whole time.
In my opinion. Yeah.
I think 20.
Maybe not first season, but I think after maybe. I think just because of his build, he's gonna struggle in the Premier League. I think after he put on a little weight, and that's like I expect. Huge things from Oscar. I think Oscar's going to be tremendous this year. After having that first year, because the first half of the season, I mean, he was just getting knocked off the ball every time he touched it. But he put on a little weight, got a little bit bigger downstairs.
Yeah.
And he started to really, really shine.
Got bigger downstairs?
Like, come on.
You know what I'm saying? I was looking around, seeing everybody else was smiling. You mean, just bigger?
Yeah, just bigger.
Okay.
I mean, like.
All right.
Well, then.
I agree.
The Neymar debate will run and
my main thing is if he's healthy. In Brazil, they would have protected him. The referees in the league would have protected Neymar in every game. In Spain, they won't protect him, and they're gonna hit him. And he is not a big guy.
To end the show, yes or no? West, Neymar, world class. Yes or no? Don't say potentially. Right now, is it world class?
By your definition, no. He's not top.
By your definition,
he's not top five in his position.
By your definition?
Mine?
Yeah.
I think he's world class.
Technically, yes. Tactically, no.
That's where we'll end it. Producer Gio, is he world class? Gio says no. I agree with him.
It's just because he's Brazilian and he beat Mexico. That's why.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're at the Londoner in Addison. Good beer, good food. Thank you, guys. Brad, West,
always
Producer
a
Gio. Yeah,
definitely always a pleasure.
We'll see you next week.
Right.
Thank you, guys. We're on the ball.
This is their moment. Beckham.